Good morning, Rabbi Galperin. Are you with me?
How are you, Ilan?
How are you?
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Is that like the introductory music?
Is that what? Sorry?
Is that the introductory music?
That was a part of it. 1 second, I just need to stop it. That's it. So I hear that everybody is ready for school.
Yes, everyone's getting out already.
That's so good.
Baruch Hashem.
So let's talk about Parashat Chayei Sarah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the parasha, which is Chayei Sarah, which talks about the life of Sarah when our mother Sarah passed away, and Abraham was going to buy a burial plot for her to bury, and obviously everyone knows that he went and wanted to buy the plot in Marat HaMachpelah,
yeah,
which is where Adam and Eve were buried, and that's in where we know today as Hebron. And eventually later on you have the forefathers and the mothers that were buried there.
Yeah.
It's interesting, in the Pasuk, Avram comes to the people of Bnei Chet, who were the people who were in charge of that place at that period of time. He said, I need to bury my daughter, my wife here. I'll pay for it if you want. And Avram describes himself as an immigrant and a resident among you. That's what he told the people. And Rashi, which is the commentator on the Torah, saying that he was saying that I'm an immigrant from another land and I have settled among you. So if I've settled among you, obviously this land is not necessarily mine, but I want to buy it from you. And we're going to look and we said, even according to the Midrash, who is explaining what Abraham was saying, he's saying that if you wish to sell me a burial site, then I am like an immigrant and will purchase it from you from whatever price you want me to do. But if not, I will be a resident and I will take it by right. Since God said to me, I will give this land to your descendants. So we have a little bit of a problem here. Rashi's comments have a number of problems. For number one, we'll try and go through it. And the explanation is a really, really interesting and also brings into the concept of the housing market today and that type of thing. But if Avram could have demanded the cave of the Machpelah where he was going to bury his wife by right, because this is what God said he's going to be giving it to his descendants, then why did he go through such great length to purchase it? He could have just said, I have the right to this land, now I'm taking it, have a nice day. If you don't like it, do whatever you want. But
no,
it's my deal. Exactly. And also, why did Abraham prove his right to the land from the verse he said, I will give this land to your descendants? Surely, it would have been a better proof because God said it two times. God said, I will give the land that in other words, for you to see, and then in other words, for Abraham, and then he said also, I will give the land for your descendants. Abraham could have used a better term. He could have said, God said that I'm going to see this land, in other words, he's going to be giving it to me. It's my right to have a nice day. Why did he go through this whole process of, I want to buy this land and pay even the money with it? And we also see that if God had already promised Abraham that I will give this land to your descendants, later on we see that Abraham made a covenant that he was promising part of the land to a tribe, to another nation. How is he able to do that? That's really going in defiance of God. If God is giving him the land for him to have, how is he then going and saying, well, I'm going to give part of the land to this other nation that they can also, keep it for themselves and basically have the right to it. So, in general, in ownership of the land, there are two different levels. There's one level which is national ownership, where, for example, a sovereign government possesses the rights to the entire country or an empire in those times. And then there's a private ownership, where an individual possesses and has the right to a specific land for himself. Now, obviously, these two types of ownership can coexist, because anyone can own a piece of land privately, but at the same time, his general right of the ownership really belongs to the government. Why? Because you can make him pay taxes. Ultimately, the government possesses the right, if the person doesn't pay, to evict the owner. So, at the end of the day, I have a right to, you know, a certain piece of land that is mine. However, the government, the leaders, are really have the right and the ownership of it also.
Okay.
So, despite the overlap between these two forms of ownership, they really are independent, because the national ownership of the land by one group of people or by one family, for example, doesn't take away the possibility of other people owning the property within it. So long as they pay the appropriate taxes and they observe the land, the laws of the land, then that's fine. So even if, you know, and that's exactly the thing, you own your house. It doesn't make a difference the fact that the real ownership, you know, is the government. You can make you pay taxes. But you still have that ownership of the house. You're still able to live there. You're still able to have you can do whatever you want to the house. You know, but however, if you want to then go and make renovations, for example, you got to go and get a building permit. So if it belongs to me, I can do whatever I want. It belongs to you that you can do whatever you want, but you still need to ask from the ownership of the national ownership. So likewise, if a group, for example, loses national ownership of the land, this doesn't take away the possibility that they continue to own some of the land privately under another regime.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to look 20 times in history, this is precisely what occurred to the Jewish ownership of the land of Israel. At times they have enjoyed the national ownership of the land, but even when the national ownership was lost, some part of the land always remained under private Jewish ownership. So we, even though we might lose, for example, a overall ownership of the whole thing, for example, a national ownership, just so we can understand the concept as an example, we still have our own private ownership. Why? Because we still own it. So based on this explanation, we can understand the distinction, if you want to say, between the two statements that God told Abraham. I will give this land to your descendants, and I will give the land that for you to see it. In other words, he's saying two times over here, basically saying that the land is going to be yours. But one's going to be for your descendants, and one's going to be for you to see. So what does that mean? That when God promised the land of Israel to Abraham's descendants, he was promising the entire land, this land. In other words, what does he mean? National ownership. That they're going to own everything. However, what God promised to Abraham, to you, in other words, to Abraham, was sufficient land to accommodate his descendants, who would be as numerous as the soil of the soil of the earth as brought down. In other words, that he promises him on a personal level that each one of Abraham's descendants would privately possess a piece of the land. And so therefore, there's two different aspects to the statement. In other words, that Abraham's descendants, he was promising national ownership. However, to Avram was sufficient enough, just that, not that he's going to own everything, but just that his kids will have enough place, you know, have their own enough private property for them to live. So if we understand that concept, we can understand the argument of what Abraham was having with the children of Chet at that period of time in order for him to buy the property for his wife. Because Abram presumed that the time had not yet come for the national ownership of the land of Israel by the Jewish people, which had only been promised to his descendants. So obviously, this did not take away his private acquisition of the part of the land. So he went and wanted to purchase the cave of the field of Machpelah, where is Hebron now, from its current owners at the time that were owning it then, people of faith. Therefore, he said, if you wish to sell it to me, then I'm an immigrant. In other words, he wasn't willing yet because he didn't feel that it was right for him to come and say, now, hold on a second. You people that are living there, you have no right there. My descendants have a national ownership on it. They can kick you out, do whatever they want, and it's mine. I don't have to pay you. I don't have to do anything. I have the rights for it. But what does he say? He says, no. He says, now is not the time for me to do that yet. And therefore, he said, I am willing to pay you. And if you're going to sell it to me, then I'm an immigrant. So if I'm an immigrant, then I have, you know, I have to pay into to be able to become a resident. But if I'm a resident of it, then I own the right. I don't need you. You know, I'll go fly a kite.
Yeah.
So Avram was also prepared for the possibility that, you know, which is normal, the people of faith will tell you, hold on a second. I'm not selling you the land. Who are you? We don't know you. But Avram deemed it unacceptable as another alternative to bury Sarah anywhere else besides in that case. Since he knew why, that Adam and Eve were buried there, and that Sarah, the mother of the Jewish people, belonged next to Adam and Eve, who were formed by God's hand. So therefore, he said like this, if the people refused to sell the cave, it could be sufficient proof to Avram that the time had come now for the national acquisition of the land of Israel, and say, you guys have no right, so it makes no difference, I'm going to take it. Thus, Avram quoted to the people God promised to the land of Israel as a whole to the Jewish people. If not, I will be a resident and I will take it by right, since God said to me, I will give this land to your descendants. So Avram was a very smart man. He said, let me try and make this acquisition in a peaceful one. And he said, listen, I have a backup. I'm going to try and say, listen, do you want me to sell? You're going to sell me the land. I'm ready to buy it. If you don't want to sell it, then I'm ready to pay the money, whatever it is. If you don't want me to sell it, if you don't want to sell it to me, then you know what? You guys are opening up a can of worms. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to come in and say, I'm going to demand it by right. If I demand it by right, you have no jurisdiction over it. You can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a difference, I think. I thought it was very interesting and how you can apply it now. You know, people think that, I'm not going to get into Israel and the conflicts and everything. I'll leave that to politicians. But if you go and look back, even in the Torah and everything, the Jews always had the national ownership of the land of Israel.
Yeah.
And Abraham did it in a way and saying, listen, you know, I'm willing to negotiate. He was a smart person. I'm willing to negotiate. I'm willing to be able to deal with you. But if you're not going to want to deal with me, if you're not going to want to be able to be mentioned, normal people, then I'm going to demand it from you for life. And there is no choice. You lose everything. So that is, you know, and I thought, and a lesson you can learn out of it, because he was so adamant in this is where his wife Sarah has to go, he was willing to put, you know, anything on the line. He was willing to pay whatever it would cost. He was willing to put up whatever fight it would have to be. You know, sometimes, we might not be the most popular person. He wasn't the most popular person in that period of time in Chesna that he was fighting with them, that he wanted a piece of land. But he still, because he knew that that was the right thing to do, that's what he did.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes if we don't necessarily, we're going to be the most popular by doing it, we still, if this is the right thing to do, that's what we need to do.
So that was one of the first real estate deals in the Bible.
Acquisition, yeah, exactly. You're right. So that's 100% true. You know, that was, so Avram was a good real estate agent.
Yeah.
So that's a small thing in the Torah portion of the sixth parsha of Chayei Sarah, the life of Sarah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see that, you know, the life of Sarah, you know, generally a small thing, is that when someone passed away, you don't really find any Torah portion that's named really after someone that's passed away. You know, for example, Lech Lecha, going out, you know, Abraham had to leave his land. Noah was being saved. Vayero, when Abraham passed last week, when Abraham was sacrificing his son. Chayei Sarah, what are we doing? Chayei Sarah, the life of Sarah. What if Sarah passed away? What are we talking about over here? The life of Sarah. We're not really talking about the life of Sarah. We're talking about the death of Sarah. But the what he's trying to prove to us and trying to show that Hayesara, the life of Sarah continues all the time if we allow it to continue. If we learn Sarah, if we go in her ways, then her life is constantly in existence, it's constantly alive, so she's not dead.
Yeah.
If we don't necessarily do it in that way, you know, lighting the candles, you know, she always had a cloud over her tent, her chalas always stayed fresh from one week to the other, those were the miracles that happened with her, then, you know, not necessarily is she going to be Hayei Sarah, the life of Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's important. She's our first mother.
That's right. That's right.
Rabbi, services.
Services Friday night. Time is moving a little bit earlier, so we're praying tomorrow night at 6:15 in the evening, and Shabbat morning 9:00, and we're in full swing for the Hanukkah menorah lighting. You know, the Davin Shamal is all excited already, all standing up. You know, we have cans already being delivered. Mackey High School is going on a huge can drive. Some other public schools, so we're getting there. One can at a time. A lot of cans have been delivered, and we need more, but we're getting there. And anyone wants to donate cans, you can donate them to drop them off at the Shaar HaShemayim between 9 and 3 and every single day, and then on the JCC, Jewish Community Center, during their business hours. And if you don't have the can to donate, you can donate money that we can allow us to go and buy cans, and all the cans are going to be donated to the homeless food pantries in Windsor.
That's great. Can by can, do whatever you can.
That's a good slogan. I like that a lot.
Okay, like you can use it. I will not charge you. Don't worry.
All right, thank you.
So, Shabbat Shalom, and we'll have you next week.
God willing. Have a great week.
Thank you.
All right, be well.
Bye-bye.